North.
South.
Urban.
Rural.
Structure.
Spontaneous. In any case, it's one hell of a conversation.
Well, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Just made pineapple, strawberry smoothies.
I enjoyed it. I'm very prepared for this breakfast for this week. I'm pretty excited.
And then that spicy barbecue shrimp.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy.
Nice. So do you have any other updates for this week?
Well, good news. Very exciting. Also a little stressful.
Yeah.
David is moving in. Scandal.
Mic drop.
Oh.
He's off the market.
I don't know what
all my homies think I'm crazy.
But really, though. It's okay.
I think we'll talk about that later, but yeah, I think it'll be an interesting experience.
I think so as well, considering we basically live together already.
Yeah, it's gonna get hot. Real steamy.
In any case. He moves in this week, so we've got a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
I can't drive a truck. I hope you know that.
Yeah, I'll take care of it all.
Oh, yeah, another update. Yeah, I'm carless currently.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that before. I'm carless currently.
Not a great driver, unfortunately.
Yeah. Is that 85?
No, it was Georgia 13. I ran into a Jeep Wrangler.
GA13.
Jeep Wrangler.
Fucking up everybody's day.
There's box shape in the front of my hood.
Yeah, your hood got one too stepped on. It's going to get fixed, though.
Yeah, shout out to Buckhead Collision for making that one happen.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Right.
Still don't know when I'm getting that back.
It's okay.
It's fine.
Anyway, let's get back on topic.
On topics of people being without a car, David, don't you have a story for us?
I do have a story for you, which I think will be a very good introduction, I feel like. Okay? So, the story begins with me landing at the airport back in Atlanta, back in the ATL.
When was this?
When did I go back home? About a month or a month and a half ago, right?
Okay.
Wasn't that too long? I always love coming back. This is a side note. This has nothing to do with the story. I always love coming back to the airport in Atlanta because you get to see Ludacris when you're going up the escalator. You also get to see Keisha Bottoms, you know, new mayor of Atlanta. So
that's true.
I always just find that very interesting. They also had a life-size cutout of Ludacris, and he looks extremely tiny. So, but anyway.
Next to the strippers on stage, he's never that.
Exactly. So I get off the escalator, and I'm choosing my method of going home. For some reason, I thought about getting a Lyft or an Uber for the entire time. But by the time I got off the escalator, I was like, you know what? My apartment is literally off a MARTA stop, so let me just take the Rapid home. So I'm getting on MARTA, and I guess there are a few characters in this story that we need to take note of. I take a seat. And directly across from me is a Hispanic family. And how do I know that? Because they're speaking Spanish, there's a piece of paper in front of them, and they keep talking frantically as if they don't know where they are or when to get off the stop, okay? So MARTA Rapid hasn't left yet, but I'm noticing that this family is looking at the piece of paper that they have, and they're also kind of checking out the Rapid map, the grid map, trying to understand. So, I'm on the MARTA train, or the locomotive, anyway.
It's a train.
You just hate my choice of words.
It ain't a rapid.
I know. I'm on the MARTA train, and this family's trying to figure out where to get off. And, so, doors close, we stop at the first stop, a person gets on. It is a homeless woman that goes quietly to each person on the cart. And basically, she just has a cup, or she's just asking people for money to get some food. Okay, so then, as she's on, and we're still at that first stop, another woman, who I believe was getting off work, comes and sits next to me. And so that closes. We go to the next stop. We get to the next stop. There's another gentleman that comes on, and he announces to the people. He has a very, he has a voice that kind of makes you, like, grab your attention. He says, like, excuse me, everyone. I really hate to, you know, disturb everyone during their day. Of course, you know what's going to happen next. He says, he gives a story about how he's a felon and he came out of jail and how he's basically trying to get back on his feet and that he's homeless and that he needs money to get clothing at a Salvation Army or something of that sort that's selling clothing on discount. And basically, he's literally announcing this to the whole cart. He's on one end and you can hear his voice on the complete other end. And people just start giving him dollars. Contrary to the woman previously at the last stop that just kept walking by, you kind of notice that people weren't giving her money. Okay. So all this is occurring. And then in that stop, that's stop number two, we get to stop number three. And a gentleman gets on. And I guess he may have had the appearance of looking homeless. I'm not sure what that is, but he had a lot of things with him. And I believe that he was saying, excuse me, to someone. But he kind of said it loudly, so it seemed like he was trying to get multiple people's attention. And the woman next to me says out loud, so the whole car can hear, oh, Lord, please don't ask me for some more money. That's the one thing I don't want you to ask me for. And the gentleman looks at her and says, ma'am, the only thing I need in my life is Jesus Christ. And he looks at the other gentleman that previously was announcing for money for his job. He says, can you believe this? This woman just completely made a prejudiced opinion about me, thinking I'm going to ask for her money. And the gentleman that was made the announcement previously, you know, they kind of jokingly kind of ridicule the woman in front of her, and she kind of looks like she's a little guilty of it and stuff like that, and they're just like, ma'am, I just don't need anything but Jesus Christ. The Lord Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. And as he's saying that, these trains have there's different sections, but there's doors that connect them to each other. And as that man says, man, the only thing I need in my life is Jesus Christ. I don't need to ask you for money. You hear the door to one train close and another man enters and he says, excuse me, y'all. I just need like 15 cents so I can get off the train. And everyone just starts busting out laughing because the woman basically made an assumption. She was wrong about that man. But as that man was ridiculing her, literally another stereotype just walked in the door asking for 15 cents to get off the train.
That he already paid for.
If you know how MARTA works, you can't get off the train unless you paid for it or you jumped or something of that sort. So everyone's cracking up. And then, you know, people just started laughing. People start asking the guy, like, how'd you get on the train, blah, 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 right? But that doesn't matter, okay? So after these events occur, we're getting to a little bit rougher stops. And still, the Spanish family is still sitting across. They've seen everything. And so this Hispanic woman comes, and she sits. She comes in the train, she sits. And this and the father of the family starts like kind of frantically speaking to her in Spanish, and you can tell that he's asking her where to go, and the woman's telling her like, I have no clue what you're talking about. So I'm noticing this, and as this is occurring, I'm so engulfed in just trying to help this man and understand where he's trying to go that I don't realize that the woman that was sitting next to me had gotten off, and there was another gentleman that took her place. And that gentleman actually started speaking in Spanish to the family, telling them where to go. I look over. It's an old black guy. And not only did I look confused, the Spanish father looked confused. So the old black guy's like, you got to get off on Peachtree. And the Spanish father's like, ¿cómo? And the black guy just starts speaking to him. He's like, you got to get off on Peachtree. If you're trying to get this, that, you got to catch the bus, go down, you'll get to Atlantic Station or something of that sort. And I just thought it was one of the funniest stories how not only was this woman being prejudiced to a homeless person, the Spanish people were also being prejudiced to everyone else on the train because they thought no one else spoke Spanish. So I thought that was just an extremely hilarious story. basically, that kind of engulfs our current topic today, which is the homeless population.
Right. So, as we have noted, we live in Atlanta.
We do live in Atlanta.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful city, I swear.
Yes.
But we have a bit of an issue.
We have a large homeless population.
Right. And unfortunately, in the past couple of years, it's looked increasingly worse. I believe we have the numbers.
Yeah, we do.
And so Atlanta is looking at a steady decline for the most part right now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that these people who are homeless aren't visible.
Right.
In fact, there was a closure of the Peachtree Pine shelter, which was a huge shelter. It could have up to 700 beds at a time. And it closed down in 2016, I believe. And so now, all of a sudden, you see all these homeless men on the street. Even though the numbers haven't gone up, it
right.
certainly looks much more sketchy.
Right. So Atlanta, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, they do this point in time study, and it looks like there's an estimated about 3,500 homeless people that have been estimated in the year 2017.
Right. And so the way that they're estimated, it's really interesting. So there's door-to-door effort. And mm-hmm. when we say that, we really mean street to street?
Yeah. People literally walk the streets in January, the last 2 weeks of January.
Which is really scary. But then again, when you think about it, it's probably the best time. Most of them will be in a shelter because it's so cold.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are left on the street are the absolute last ones, typically those who like have their own corners. We have several villages that crop up. Of course, it's kind of a health and safety hazard because they're underneath the highway. So I-85 and I-75 converge and create the connector. And the connector goes on until you hit Interstate 20. And so underneath the connector around Edgewood Avenue, there's a routine homeless population. And it wouldn't be a problem, except there's no plumbing.
Isn't that how one of the highways actually burned down?
No. That's a different story. Okay. But we'll talk about that one, because that's a good one.
Okay.
And so the main problem here is that it's just unhygienic. Like, there's nowhere for people to use the restroom, and furthermore, even if there was, there's not really any resources for clean water. So things that are really simple diseases that should be preventable, like dysentery, are actually really common in homeless populations, especially those in vulnerable situations like that. So on to David's point, there was a bit of a, problematic issue in Atlanta. You might have heard of this, where we stored high-density plastic conduit from the Department of Transportation, good job, Georgia DOT, underneath the Interstate 85 in the north area of town. So this is close to Buckhead, which is nationally known as a really nice area. You don't typically see that many homeless people in Buckhead, right?
Yeah, I think it depends on how far away from like Midtown you are, but yeah.
So it's at Piedmont that this wonderful high-density plastic conduit catches fire. Fun fact, high-density plastic conduit,
when it
catches fire, is incredibly hot burning.
Super lit.
It melted the highway.
Super hot.
It was insane. And so this happens in, I believe, May of 2017.
Yep, because that was right before I was moving down to Atlanta.
Lord have mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the story, the person who's namely blamed for this meltdown of the highway, which was, by the way, extremely expensive to fix, taxpayer dollars, was a man who was homeless and supposedly a crackhead who had been misbehaving underneath the highway and supposedly ended up leaving somehow the place aflame.
And they said that he lit a wooden chair.
Right.
That was sitting in a grocery cart on
Which
fire.
Which makes no sense. Who does that?
How does a highway melt from a chair getting on fire?
It's the burning of the conduit.
It's insane.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Anyways, that was clearly Georgia DOT's bad.
Bad.
Admittedly, you shouldn't set things on fire underneath the highway in general.
That's also true.
And so this homeless man was going to take all the blame. Like, really, most of the news sources were hammering down on the homeless population and, in general, what had happened. They didn't really blame DOT as much as they should have. I largely think that you shouldn't put anything flammable without any sort of covering on it.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, apparently common sense does not go through bureaucracy. It's fine.
It's unfortunate that that event occurred, and even more unfortunate that the media decided to point at, you know, a party that is most likely less probable to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if there were some actions taken by the city, that homeless person would have never even been under the highway.
Right. And so that comes into our next point. So we're kind of thinking about where homelessness is in Atlanta, what it's looking like, and furthermore, why it exists in the form that it does.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting because Atlanta has taken varying roles as to how we have combated our homeless problem. Most notably, we have a lot of different shelters, like Atlanta Mission, and then the Salvation Army Domestic Violence Center, which will house homeless women and children. And so we've got numerous different places for our homeless to go, but the biggest problem is they don't have very many beds.
Okay.
So most of these shelters are really nice, and they provide meals. They can give a lot of different items, like food and clothing. Clothing's rarely something that homeless shelters in Atlanta need anymore because they just have a plethora of it. People donate a lot of clothes. That's something I didn't realize.
I've also noticed that some homeless guys will have some fresh-ass shoes on.
What?
I'm not even lying. Like, I'll just see, like, some, like, a homeless gentleman with, like, new Kevin Durant shoes on or something like that. And I'm just like, where in the hell? I've seen homeless guys with Jordans on.
Priorities.
I don't know. Maybe people just are really good at donating stuff, but I don't know. It's crazy.
So basically this homelessness manifests itself because of the lack of beds. Like I said before, the Peachtree Pine shelter closed down in 2016. And so we kind of saw the effects of that, interestingly enough, in winter. So David's story is a pretty good one about the MARTA. But more importantly, there's a huge issue of homeless people staying in the atrium of the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta Airport.
Huh?
Yeah. So the winter of 2017, there's several articles written by the AJC, and they're all essentially being like, why are there so many homeless people just chilling in this atrium of the airport?
And AJC is
Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Okay.
So,
homeless people staying in the atrium of the airport?
Right, so it's right before you get to security.
Right.
And there's benches.
That's where the baggage claim is, right?
No. Because you can't... You go to baggage claim before you exit.
Okay.
So they can't get people's luggage, if that's what you're considering. But
no, I'm saying, like, sometimes when you drop someone off at the airport, when you're entering into the airport at a certain way, you'll be passing where the belt lines are for baggage. Or are you talking about, like, by the food court?
Food court.
So you're saying there's homeless people hanging out at the food court?
Yeah.
In the
and
airport.
In the, yeah, the lobby area.
Oh, that's crazy.
Right. And so it's, namely, because it's warm in there. And
that's
so
a good
cold.
Tactic, though. I'm not even mad at that. That's smart.
Unfortunately,
that's smart. There's so many people moving there, right? there's so many people going all the time in an airport,
mm-hmm.
it's less likely that someone's going to be focused on that one person for a few hours.
Right. Unfortunately, it became a trend.
Oh.
And when somehow, like, there became the scent of urine in the halls, it looks bad, right?
Yeah, it looks super bad.
Unfortunately, it's unhygienic.
It is. But it's also a direct line. Like, you know exactly how that happened. The MART is right there.
Oh, yeah.
Just and get off the train, go inside.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it was a huge problem. What do you do with people who are clearly freezing outside? You can't stick them in the cold.
Can't be inhumane.
But you obviously can't have them at the airport, which is our main form of business. It's not really a good look either way.
Yeah, there's a dilemma with that.
And there just aren't enough beds.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different variables, I feel like, when it comes to...
The Atlanta homeless.
You got those that are comfortable in their situation, as some people may not be able to understand it. Like, there's just some homeless people that are comfortable
mm-hmm.
with being homeless.
Apparently, panhandling can make some pretty good money.
New York, I heard people in New York make about $30,000
yeah.
a year. Panhandling. You have those that are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be, you know, you have to kind of like proceed with caution.
Right.
When communicating and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it's crazy. Like, actually, I was in Thousand Hills today in Midtown and there was a homeless woman.
It's a coffee shop.
So I was in a coffee shop in Midtown and there was a homeless woman there sitting. You know, minding her own business, but she's clearly talking out loud to where everyone in the entire building can hear. And she continues to have a conversation talking about 1800s, talking about Confederates and niggas.
Okay.
Yeah, like the whole time for at least 30 minutes and stuff. And they have a security guard there too. And you could tell the security guard was kind of like in a pinch. Like, they didn't really know what to do. Like, she wasn't harming anyone.
Right.
You know? And like, it was during the daytime. Like, it's like 10 a.m. or something like that. So it's kind of like the security guard isn't a psychiatrist, you know? Like, you're asking people who are, you know, their job title is to be a security guard, you know, protect this area. But you have some homeless that it's better off having someone that is a professional with people with mental disabilities or things like that.
Right. Especially in that circumstance, I feel like you get into the almost the Starbucks conundrum. Like, well, did she buy something?
I saw she had a coffee, and I don't know if someone bought it for her. I personally didn't know how she was there when I got there, so I wasn't sure. But I just noticed she wasn't bothering anyone. She was just pretty loud.
Right. So it's like the grounds by which you could feasibly kick somebody out of a building.
Potentially, but I guess maybe with her being homeless and, you know,
babbling
to herself, you run the risk of, is it getting worse if you try to get her to leave versus her just not bothering anybody besides the tone of her voice.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a very interesting question. So yeah. When we look at homeless in Atlanta, that's one look. We've got looking at them in the airport. And then you know it's bad when someone has to say, well, I'm not trying to be bad, but...
That was prefaced?
Yeah. I just think it's funny because it's like everyone's like, oh, I'm not racist, but...
Oh, okay.
And it's like whenever you have to say a but, you're being racist. Anyways, I'm not...
Are you not trying to be bad right now?
I'm trying to not paint a stereotype. Because okay. I don't think it's true.
Yeah.
But then again, I also happen to notice a trend.
Okay.
And that trend is that I am a pretty vulnerable-looking white chick.
Extremely vulnerable-looking white chick.
And sometimes I look a little befuzzled.
I'm a little confused. In the clouds.
And generally jolly. I would like to say I'm pretty jovial.
You're too optimistic of a human being.
I smile.
I really.
And I
that's
don't know
how
what
I,
I'm smiling.
That's
at.
How I like to describe it. You are way too optimistic about the greater good of a human being.
Anyways, I am a massive target for homeless people.
Bless you and your
panhandlers. Just like think that I'm going to give them the world. It's really, and I hate it because it's kind of.
You are cutthroat.
I'm awful.
You are cutthroat.
I look at them. I'll acknowledge them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not rude. I'll say hello, and then if they say, "Do you have a minute?" No, I don't. Sorry, yeah. I don't. And the worst part is they always ask me as I'm going to MARTA, and I'm like, "Excuse me." So, basically, being this massive target, I get a lot of different personalities coming at me. Usually, they always start with, and this is strange, like, I get the same people who start with the same story every time that I tell them no.
Okay.
And so, usually, they have just gotten off the bus from Birmingham or Nashville, Memphis, or New Orleans. That's my favorite.
Stop it.
I have gotten so many New Orleans people.
What?
It's crazy. They always say, "Miss, I just need a minute." And I'm like, "Okay, that's fine. If I have time." And then they give me the story about how they just got off a bus from New Orleans and they're trying to make a better life for themselves. And I'm totally okay with that. Like, make a better life for yourself. But if you are asking me for money, you're not going to get it.
Jeez.
I just, no.
Is it usually
panhandling's not a skill.
Is it usually an African-American male?
Every time.
Gotcha.
Funnily enough, black females do not tend to ask me. I don't know why. I think I only have only the ones on MARTA, and even then, I guess I have a death stare on MARTA. I just do not. I have a don't fuck with me face.
Yeah.
And so, maybe.
You just like leave it on the train when you get off the train, though.
Sometimes you gotta be prepared.
Okay.
And so, it's just one of those circumstances where no matter what, I feel like I tend to be the premier panhandling destination of Atlanta. It's kind of funny because you see it, most people who look like me on MARTA, they're not from the city.
Yeah.
And they are easy targets for panhandlers.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, but I can definitely see what you're saying.
Yeah, so it looks like they have a market here
in
Atlanta.
They do have a market.
Even though, fun fact, panhandling is illegal, and the Atlanta Ambassador Task Force is
You have to explain what that is to people.
I'm about to get there.
Okay. Do your thing, girl. Do your thing.
Please don't do that out loud. Anyways, so the Atlanta Ambassador Task Force is designed to be a friend of downtown. And essentially, they are supposed to... Yeah.
A friend of downtown. Oh, they ride on Segways.
I know.
They ride on Segways and wear uniforms. I can't take them seriously. I don't even know what they do. They don't even say hi to people.
No, their goal
is... They're friends of downtown Atlanta, but they don't even talk to people.
They're protective, right? So that's they cute. Are maintenance-based, as well as if there's a panhandler. Typically, they're supposed to, I don't want to say clear them out, but generally move them along.
I've never seen an ambassador do that.
I also don't see many homeless people by ambassadors. So I don't know if there's a correlation.
Okay, you might have a point. You might have a point there. Yeah, maybe.
And they usually relegate them to certain areas. Like, the task force is literally across the street from Woodruff Park, which is probably one of the biggest homeless destinations in Atlanta.
A lot of homeless people there.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure they keep them to that area.
Hmm.
Which I think is kind of awful, but that's just me.
Interesting.
Anyway, so I think that, David, you have a story about what homelessness looks like in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, so I went to school in downtown Cleveland, and I basically took the, it's called the Rapid in Cleveland. I took the Rapid in Cleveland from the suburbs, from where I was from, about a 20-minute ride into downtown Cleveland. So I've experienced the homeless for about 5 years of my collegiate life. And I noticed that the methods always seem to change from my freshman year to my senior year. It's like the homeless got smarter, or like Like, they took, like, a few marketing classes or some shit like that. Like, I don't know. But anyway, freshman year it was, you know, excuse me, sir, I hate to bother you, but, you know, do you have some change or something of that sort? Into senior year, it graduated to, I don't need any change. Can you just go with me to buy me a sandwich? Or something of that sort. Mm-hmm. It's I need an item. You don't have to give me money, but can you at least go into the store, which I'm standing out in front of, and get me a sandwich? Which makes it a little bit more difficult to say no. Because I feel like a lot of times people don't want to give money because they don't know what the person's going to do with it, right?
Right.
Or they don't know if they're giving funding to someone's vice or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I don't know, like, I've given money to the homeless sometimes, but in Atlanta, it was the first time someone panhandled me at the MARTA station to buy them a MARTA card to get on the train. And I remember after I told you that, you were like, David, they do that all the time. Like,
yeah.
There's always people standing next to the, like, the ticket machines.
Which makes me so mad, because there's a reduced fare office at Five Points. It's not a far walk.
Okay, so there is a method for someone who can't afford a $2.50
Right, ride? I mean, it is a hefty price for a ride.
Yeah.
It's $2.50 for one trip. That's not round trip either.
Right.
But there's a reduced fare office that's open 40 hours a week.
What can they get it for, like 50 cents?
I don't know the exact pricing.
Okay.
I know that it's significantly less.
Gotcha.
So it's for those with economic hardship and disability.
Okay.
So.
And I feel like that's what's also been a difficulty with some people wanting to donate or give money to panhandlers. It's maybe people aren't aware that there are public institutions in line to help people.
Right. And it just bothers me because all you have to do is just donate to those causes, and most of them are incredibly transparent, and you can look and see what they fund when, and they know how to help these people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to give money to a homeless person because clearly they need some help to get out of their situation.
Right.
And I'm not the best suited to do that. Who is the best suited to do that is someone who's trained in this.
Yeah.
And somehow I don't think the homeless person was.
My mom is actually, she works at the Veterans Affairs Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually informed me of a program, at least it's in Cleveland. I'm not sure if it's throughout the entire program of the VA, but I would assume it is since it's a national hospital for veterans, that there's actually a homeless program.
Mm-hmm.
Where the VA will house a veteran that's homeless, and essentially they get to live in a like a dorm style
mm-hmm.
building that the VA owns, and they can stay there until they die.
Wow.
Like, they just have to apply for it and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even realize programs like that existed.
They do. And they're all over too. So many homeless shelters like Atlanta Mission will help with you filling out job applications, filling out applications to be able to actually live in an apartment.
Yeah.
Things like that.
It's crazy.
However, it's really difficult to have all these applications and be able to do these things when there's a rising cost of living, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's like so we looked up a few figures for specific cities, and we looked up we initially got this for three cities. So this is for Atlanta, Orlando, and Seattle.
And we picked those for very specific reasons.
So we
Atlanta
can pick
Atlanta,
yeah.
Because
Atlanta, we got about 3,500 people in 2017. And why did we pick it?
We picked Atlanta because, well, first off, we live here. We see it firsthand.
Right.
And second of all, because it seems to be a city that is really growing rapidly and has a lot of controversy over where homeless people should be.
Okay.
Like, if you see a homeless person in the suburbs, it is a no-no, right?
Yeah, so, I could agree with that.
Canton, Georgia had people with signs, and it was an absolute uproar about 2 years ago. Mm. I'm from Canton. Shout out to Canton.
And then we picked Orlando, Florida, which in 2017 was estimated to have about 2,000 homeless people. Why did we pick Orlando?
So, we picked Orlando for a very interesting reason. Disney.
a wonderful world.
I think it's ironic because I was actually, I follow a lot of politicians, but Bernie Sanders tends to be pretty vocal about the fair wage. And so he had on a particular platform these two women who worked at Disney, and they couldn't afford an apartment in Orlando. And a lot of people
end up homeless and working.
Yep, they'll live out of their cars.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate.
It's crazy. Now, it doesn't look like there's that many homeless people in Orlando, mm-hmm. but when you consider that the poverty rate in 2017 was 25.6%, which is over 10% over the national average, you're looking at an extremely inequitable situation.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then the third city that we picked is Seattle, Washington, which has 11,000 homeless people. And why did we pick Seattle?
Oh, Seattle. I've always wanted to go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that the hipsters would be my people. But unfortunately, with really great burgeoning tech giants like Amazon and Microsoft, you also have Starbucks headquartered there. And so those massive corporations are going to lead to lots and lots of high-paying jobs for engineers, mm-hmm. which also leads to a spike in housing costs. And that in particular has been the biggest problem that Seattle has had to face, is the fact that they have just unaffordable housing.
Yeah, it's actually crazy how you kind of note it with these big tech companies mm-hmm. Kind of contributing to the homeless population. The HUD annual report actually noted that 50% of the homeless population estimated in the United States mm-hmm. are basically five states contributing to 50% of it. Wow. Yeah. And Washington is the fifth one. They contribute to 4%.
That's a lot. Yeah.
And Florida is actually third. They contribute to 6%.
Interesting.
So I think once you include like Tampa and Miami, you know, like those other big Florida places, mm-hmm. It's actually insane to think about that.
So, definitely.
Yeah.
So when we think about this, we chose these three cities kind of as case studies. Mm-hmm. So Atlanta, obviously, we live and see, but we think about where people tend to go.
Yeah.
And at least from my perspective, a lot of my friends absolutely adore Disney. And it looks all hunky-dory, but, I mean, I have friends who work at Disney World as janitors who have degrees from very good institutions, and they make $12, $13, $15 an hour.
Yeah.
They're looking at barely being able to afford housing.
Yeah, it's
crazy. They
start
at 11.
There's multiple facets, I feel like, with Disney that it gets crazy. You know, like, this is unrelated, but there's been discussions about their international program too, where they mm-hmm. have people from other countries come over, and like those people are also just not getting much money when they go back home.
Absolutely. So that's the reason why we really are focusing in on Orlando as a case study. And then Seattle, of course, with its big companies, it looks like it's going to also be a really great situation for everyone involved, but it's kind of going the same way of most Californian cities, which is to say that people can't afford to live there.
Yeah, it's yeah, Seattle and Washington and California are both within the top five states that are contributing to the homeless. So it definitely seems like Seattle, Washington's continuing that trend that like a San Francisco would be contributing in California.
Right. So thinking about these three cities, the good question is, how are they battling homelessness? Right?
Yeah.
So, with Atlanta, we've got our task force and a couple of varying...
Task force go. Team go.
shelters that are working. And both Seattle and Orlando also have a nice variety of shelters to work with. But Atlanta has not really initiated affordable housing, which is a huge problem because we're seeing, even for us, like, a regular two-bedroom apartment to split, you're looking at, what, $900?
A person, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult if you don't have a job that pays well.
Yeah, and it's not going to get any better with the city of Atlanta getting more popular. Movies keep getting filmed here. Mm-hmm. The development of the city, like literally the city of Atlanta promised a certain amount of money just to develop the city even more. So there's no telling how much that gap is going to get increased.
Right. So Atlanta has a particular project called the Beltline. It's very unique. Well, lies. It's not unique. It's cool. I think it's very cool.
It's dope.
It's modeled after a, I believe it's Dallas-Fort Worth, similar Beltline. My apologies if that's incorrect. I'll double check for you and put it on the blog that we have.
Oh, shit.
Anyways, and so this Beltline project was supposed to include light rail, parks, nature trails, multi-use pathways, as well as affordable housing pockets throughout the city. It's supposed to be circular. Obviously, it's a Beltline. And so it's supposed to encompass the vast majority of the downtown, midtown, Virginia Highlands, even down into the Castleberry Hills sort of area. It was supposed to be this really wholesome project to beautify Atlanta and unify Atlanta. All fine and dandy. We get $21 billion, and it's not quite half. Actually, it's like a third done. And we've seen no light rail.
Wait,
we've
seen $21 billion? Did they go through it?
They're not done it.
Okay.
There's also a proposal. Actually, I think my $21 billion number's with MARTA. And so the point here is that the affordable housing that we're supposed to have gotten with the Beltline doesn't exist.
Interesting.
It's really frustrating because it's supposed to be a very wholesome project. It's not supposed to be for the rich only.
It's supposed to be inclusive.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've got a west side and an east side trail, and we're supposed to be making the south side trail, and it's almost done. We just bought the railroad corridor that's going to make it happen. It's a trail, so it's not going to take that long. But it's really frustrating because half of what's supposed to make this such a good, inclusive project hasn't even been
started.
It doesn't have funding.
Wow, so the affordable housing doesn't even have funding yet.
I don't think it will.
But they're getting the trails done. So it just sounds good on paper, is what it sounds like.
Essentially, yeah.
Interesting.
And so this is the biggest thing that Atlanta has done to try and really lift up the city. And unfortunately, it hasn't really... I mean, it looks good.
Yeah.
If you go from Pont City Market, it looks good.
It does.
How Stuff Works has a really nice view of it.
I would love to see that view. That'd be dope.
Anyways, and so then you look at Orlando, you're a little shocked because Disney actually refuses to comment on the impoverished natures of their workers. And so that's a really frustrating runaround. A lot of homeless people don't live in Orlando proper. They live in Kissimmee, Florida, which is the sister city. Therefore, making this problem a lot more difficult to configure. There's, incidentally, a really interesting documentary that I highly recommend that folks watch. It is called The Florida Project. And so it's kind of a stretch, but it's directed by Sean Baker, and it's about the struggles of two people who live in the Magic Castle, which is a hotel that's sketchy and essentially...
Not a magic castle, is what you're trying to say.
It's a low-budget hotel,
okay.
Let's put it that way. And so that's really going to open your eyes to quite the problems that, in particular, a lot of low-wage workers feel. And then in Seattle, they have embraced the affordable housing. And there have been a lot of different proposals to try and get tiny houses to become neighborhoods for the homeless. Isn't that cute? Isn't that cute?
Tiny houses?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I agree with that. I would have to see what the tiny house looks like. At least something's being done for the homeless, I believe. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those difficult situations where one side wants to help out the homeless as much as possible, you know, fully over. And then another side, it's like, okay, how do we get those unsheltered sheltered, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then how do we get those homeless no longer homeless? How do we get them, you know,
so are you
those,
talking
those that are able?
Rehab versus hiding?
I don't know. Rehab versus hiding. I know there are people that are fully capable that might just have a drug addiction,
right,
or something of that sort. So it's a problem that once you get housing for people, those that may be jobless also, like, mm-hmm, how do you get them to provide for themselves, kind of thing. So I don't think the problem just stops at getting people shelter.
Right, and I don't think that anyone would say that. I think that, so for example, the Low Income Housing Institute in Seattle with their tiny homes, the idea is that if you have a very basic but steady place to go back to, you can create routine in your life. And routine typically is what anchors people.
All right.
And so the routine will help them to kind of have a better track.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea behind doing a tiny home. It's not like giving someone a house is just going to solve all their problems. I don't think anyone pretends to believe that.
Okay.
I think the problem is more along the lines of, how do you support these people best?
Yeah.
And the argument that I would make is that making sure that they have somewhere to always go back to,
yeah,
to feel ownership over, is going to help a lot more. People who don't feel, yeah, like they own things tend to kind of throw away what they have.
True, true. I can see that side of it. It's just, I think it's a pie that has a lot of different slices to it. 'Cause we could slice this story in a thousand different ways if we wanted to, right? We could slice it to Disney not paying their workers enough. We could slice it down to those that need rehabilitation through drug use, those who need professional psychiatric care due to mental issues. We could slice it down to convicted felons that just won't get jobs,
mm-hmm,
because they're felons.
That's true.
There's multiple ways to slice this homeless problems thing down.
So
yeah, it's crazy.
Well, I think even though there are a bunch of different directions that this could go,
yeah,
I think a nice little overview, just thinking about the possibilities of what's been happening, has been pretty insightful.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we've gotten to talk over it.
Yeah. It's a story that actually hits close to home for me. So if I'm able to add in some more detail with the person I'm trying to get in touch with, I'll add it to this.
Call is now being recorded.
All right, Dad. So one, thank you for taking some time out. I appreciate it. So I guess for a little bit of background, can you kind of just state a little bit about yourself? Like, what would you tell somebody if they just asked you to describe yourself?
I describe myself as an individual who really is very ambitious, sometimes unrealistic, and consequently I kind of live a very frustrated and unfulfilled life, and I have to clearly turn to alcohol and drugs to alleviate some of my voids that I had within my life. But at the whole, I'm a very, very, very driven,
mm-hmm,
individual. That's one thing. I've gotten up off the canvas a plethora of times.
Yeah, and you you also played college basketball, right? So I guess that's kind of where you're. You might have gotten that
characteristic. Yeah. But yeah, for Phil, college basketball got me, it enhanced my self-esteem, it got me notoriety. But still, just instill the void because all my mind can see is to ask for is always more.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're never satisfied, the dog will never catch his tail.
Right, right. So for this week, Laura and I were looking into the homeless population, and specifically in cities such as Atlanta, Washington, Seattle, Seattle, Washington, and what was the last one? Orlando. And she kind of just picked those cities just for she was interested more so in workers that were around Disneyland and people that were in tech companies, big cities like that. And then, of course, you know, Atlanta and things like that. So we've had different experiences and different types of interaction with the homeless population. So I guess I wanted to ask what your experience has been with the topic of homelessness and the homeless population.
It's a state of mind. It's people because you never actually have to live like that. It's a choice of people who really have just succumbed and given up on life.
Okay.
Lost their drive, lost their fight. A lot of it, a large portion of the population also has mental defects. And that really has to be, that's one area where the country has really turned its back on individuals' mental health.
Okay.
That's really. And it's just mushrooms into the streets, literally.
Right. I did a little background search on it, and it seemed that a lot of 50% of the homeless are in 5 states. So, like, they're the largest states, and they have some of the largest price of living.
It's in where?
Like California, New York, Florida. So all those places hold 50% of the entire homeless population. But I was kind of looking into, you know, a lot of these situations where you might want to categorize the homeless population, and it seemed like there'd be, or people would want to try and determine how to solve that problem. And I kind of saw it as you have to first categorize how the homeless population is kind of, you know, sectioned up. Like, you have those that
it's comprised primarily, and I'm talking at least 90%, 9 out of 10, of either chemical or mental disorder.
Okay. So mental or drug related?
Yes.
Okay.
Easily.
Gotcha.
Easily. It's very rare you're going to find a guy who does not have one of those two.
Okay.
Living out here.
And it seemed like a lot of it, you know, of course, this topic could be discussed later, but there seemed to be some kind of correlation with the imprisoned population and the homeless population, where a lot of the population and that were in prison is like 37% are black males and like 40% are black males in the homeless population and stuff like that. But when I also dissected those numbers, it seemed that a lot, or at least from Obama in 2013, or I think it was 2010, actually, he released, his administration released something called the Opening Doors Program, where they were basically trying to get more resources out. And it seemed like the number of homeless are going down, and also those that are unsheltered are going down a little bit, at least the trend seems to be. So it seemed like a lot of the population is homeless in sheltered areas. Do you agree with that or no?
Yeah, they're in sheltered areas, and you'd be surprised of the reluctance to use the resources that are at their disposal. And and you're talking about the correlation with the incarceration penal system and homelessness. I mean, once again, you go into prison, and those 90%, once again, are primarily either mental or chemically defective.
Gotcha. So I guess we were kind of talking about it before. You're telling me a little bit of experience, but Have you had an experience in a shelter before, or did you experience, do you have an interaction with homeless people, like, around a shelter before?
No. I had one night, because a lot of people are using it, they have to show some type of being indigent to receive a lot of the assistance that's available to them, so they may go in and claim they're homeless when they could find shelter. But
gotcha.
I mean, this right here, this is where I'm literally, this is my rock bottom.
Okay. So you're in, what would you categorize it as? The type of facility?
It's a halfway house.
A halfway house. How would you define that to someone like myself that wouldn't really know how to define
that? A halfway house is a place where it's a place where they will shelter you and provide living conditions,
mm-hmm.
with the understanding and under the impression or the understanding that you are seeking to get better, and that this is not permanent. This is an opportunity.
Gotcha. Is that considered as a sheltered form of homelessness, or do you know that or not?
I would categorize it. I don't think they would consider this a homelessness. No.
Okay.
No, okay. Because you have to be admitted in a certain criteria, mm-hmm. and you can be discharged.
Gotcha. But you have.
I mean, you can do that from any shelter, but you have.
But you do have people in there that have been homeless before.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they're trying to seek, and everyone's trying to sign up for some type of housing program.
Okay.
But this is the steps you have to take.
Okay, but you were also saying that those who may be homeless have plenty of public resources to go to, but some just don't want to do that.
You know those tent cities and all those that they have. I guess they're kind of popular down in Florida, aren't they?
Yeah, they got tent cities in California, Florida.
They don't have to live in those things, Dave.
Really?
Yeah, they don't have to live in those things. There's places for them to go. They don't want to.
So you're saying, like, there are plenty of public resources for people not to live outside?
Yeah.
That's kind of where you're getting back to the mental state.
Exactly. One thing that they cannot handle is authority.
Is what?
Authority.
Authority. Authority.
They want no criterias.
Okay.
They want to be able to do what they want to do.
Okay.
They don't want to follow any direct, no rules.
Interesting. So I guess you're not too opening to a panhandler then, I'm guessing.
No, because it's kind of a catch-22. I mean, I provide it periodically, kind of predicate on my state of mind, but I don't want to send a wrong impression that this is a way to make a living. I mean, I had a guy years ago when I was working for the county. I had one payday. I had one payday. I gave him $5. You know, he started coming to my job every 2 weeks after that.
He came to your job every day after that.
Every 2 weeks. Anticipating that I got paid again and that he would get a, so he wasn't grateful. He became reliant or expected. And that's see, you have to watch how people take generosity. It can be perceived the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah. Laura said she doesn't give out money because she's fully aware of all the public resources around. Some people will stand next to, you know, like a train ticket machine and ask you to pay for them. And, you know, she'll say, like, I know for a fact there's a discounted office for you to get it for like 50 cents versus $2.50. Like if you're not able to pay for it and things like that. So,
I mean,
I think,
but you would probably have to go through something in order to get that discount though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but once you show that you're unable to pay for it, then you're able to get, like, you know, like a prorated or
thing.
Like a discount.
That's the thing. That's the thing with them, though. They're not going to go through any procedures at all. They don't have the patience or the mental order to follow it through.
Right. Right. Okay.
I mean,
so you believe that this issue is more so we need to invest more in mental rehabilitation?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. But see, the thing I worry about is, because you know, and you come from a science background, science is nothing but just a series of tests and just to see what the results. We don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody we're using are pretty much lambs, sacrificial. We don't know. We really don't. You pump them up with all these drugs and you look and you try to see, and you sit back and see the results. And you'll get 9 of them. You'll get 10 and you'll conclude with the majority.
Are you concerned with the population or the homeless population or how that might trend with the current administration? Or when there's a more conservative president? Do you feel like that kind of plays a role?
No, because ultimately, I'm still under the impression that you, like I said, we had a black president for 8 years. And those are probably 8 of the worst years of my life. So it has nothing to do with the administration at hand. It's you. You ultimately determine your fate. I don't like, now that's one thing, I don't like that socialist mentality. Government ain't going to dictate your future. You will. You will. They may set out parameters or policies that may be more conducive to your views, but ultimately you're going to succeed, man, from your own effort. It's on you, man. Quit giving the government that much power. I had a black president in office. That was the first 8 years of my life. You know, unemployment now is 3.8%. Unemployment is 3.8%, and we have a buffoon in office. They don't have a bearing on that stuff, man. We give them too much credit when things go well, and we give them too much blame when things go bad. What you judge some individuals on are their own individual behaviors. Because we're comprised of checks and balances anyway. They don't have that much power.
Yeah.
No branch is autonomous. None. But far as the funding go, they can definitely show more empathy for this group. Because this is where we get. And I mean, it's kind of weird because, and what we try to do is we try to live with a moral compass. Why do you think we place so much emphasis and money into youth?
I don't know. Well, because of the future. That's an investment.
Thank you, because that's our future. Well, what do we do with an individual that we see can no longer contribute?
Throw them in jail, basically paint, you basically give them a bad apple marker.
Well,
that
no,
they
I mean,
can't
I mean they're not criminals, but they're mentally disabled, or they can't really aid us. So we'll give them what we do. We'll give them some type of check so they can live off of minimum. But an alcoholic or a homeless individual, we don't want to invest nothing into them.
Yeah.
Because we don't think that they can contribute or they're worth investment. But what about the elderly that we know aren't going to contribute anymore? Why do we still expend so much money and resources on them? Because morally we should, right? Man, did you know before Sonny died, they wanted to do surgery on him for his cancer? A double amputee, 84 years old, man. Nobody's about to pay for this, man. Stop it.
Right.
Quit prolonging the inevitable. And that's what we get with these. You see how we won't invest in these people, though. They won't invest in them, Dave. They won't invest in them. Because I tell you, I don't know, and you know, we always use the phrase, lost a person's mind. When a person loses their mind. Have you ever known someone to find it? That's what I mean. So that's why we don't want to invest. Humans are the most prevalent commodity to invest in. But what happens when you don't believe in somebody? You don't want to give them a chance. That's where they at, man. That's where they're at, babe. I need to find somebody who's going to believe in me. Babe, I'm not made to disassemble vending machines and things like that. I have a mind, man. Mm-hmm. Opportunity to make a difference. I need somebody to trust me, to believe in me.
Yeah.
I need a break. They don't invest in me anymore, Dave.
Yeah.
They say they can't find the parts for the car. The parts would be too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really just trashing it. Didn't try to refurbish it. And that's what they're doing to these guys, man. But that's why it's so imperative, man, that the ones that are really young, man, you grab them. You grab them. The young homeless population is really, really scary.
So have you seen a lot of those that are, like, under 24?
I was shocked at it. You know what? I found out that a lot of them come from, I guess, foster care. You have a certain age, and they just throw you out the pasture.
Oh, so a lot of the youth homeless, which they would categorize as, I think, under 24 or under 18 are just from foster homes?
No, they were, because I guess, you see, once again, it's about the investment. Once the government keeps, because you know, you will not believe the kind of money that they're paying these foster parents to take care of these children. I knew a guy, he had like three or four kids, he was getting $5,000 a month.
To take care of the kids?
Once. Yeah, foster parents. Foster care.
Wow.
People live off of that. Foster
wow.
care. So once the money stops, the kids go out to pasture. And now they're homeless.
So you're seeing a very large youth homeless population.
And that's probably about your 10%. Yeah, your 10% of the actual homeless population. Because you look at these kids, and you're like, well, man, why aren't you staying with your mom or your relative? The kids, they don't have any relationship with them. And now they become just estranged from everything. And it's sad. Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, kids were down there at the shelter. Another living. It's very sad, man, to live in a life, live in a world without love. Without family.
Yeah.
And that's how they're living.
That's crazy.
And the one thing about these guys you got to watch, man, this is real scary, is that they become comfortable with that way of life living. That's the scary thing. When they
become home, they become comfortable staying on the street.
Yeah, you haven't had a front, you haven't had a door key in years. Abnormal, dang. Most people got somewhere they can call home. They got to get their mail. I mean, what? Shoes.
Yeah.
It's scary, man.
All right, Dad. Well, thanks for giving your input on that. I appreciate it.
All right. Was that helpful?
Yeah, of course.
All right, buddy, man. Glad to be able to assist you.
Thanks, Dad. I'll have Brandon reach out to you, or I'll let you know how me and Brandon just coordinate.
Okay.
This.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
All right, Dad. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Love you, buddy. All right.
All right. I love you, too.
With that being said, thank you so much for listening to this latest episode.
Yeah, thanks so much.
In any case,
I'm looking forward to continuing this consistency that we're going down.
Absolutely. So please check out the In Any Case pod WordPress, and it's inanycasepodcast.com.
We got a website, motherfuckers.
Yeah, that's what he said. So inanycasepod.wordpress.com or inanycasepodcast.com.
Yeah.
And
what can they find on
this? I blog.
You blog. Nice.
And hang on, I have got a great introduction.
Okay.
Let me find that page because I'm really good at this.
I will actually co-sign this. This introduction is pretty fucking baller, if I can agree with that one. So, yeah. You sound like my grandma trying to figure out how to work her phone right now.
It's so hard. Okay. in any case, was conceived like most grand ideas in a bar, waiting on the skee ball. David and I were talking about our hobbies and our passions, trying to find a way to join them. David asked, why not make a podcast? And the rest, you might say, is history.
It is history.
So who are y'all? A school teacher and an engineer based in Atlanta. A couple brought together by a beer called Sunset over Phuket. I think I said that wrong, but it's okay.
Sound like you said fuck it.
Fuck it. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
We're zany in a way. One of us has her head in the clouds, and the other's focused beyond the scope kind of man. We're utter opposites. And the reason why we did this podcast is that sometimes you have to talk it out. Silence is not the answer to your problems or mine. As avid podcast listeners, we hear a variety of noise. Some good quality stories, lighthearted jokes, and spinning political commentary. None of it covers the more intimate feelings in life. Like the freedom of stepping onto the tarmac from your really cheap flight, or listening to rap music with a twinge of anxiety at a party. We want to explore the unique yet commonplace experiences of our different makeups. A black male and a white female.
Yep. So, can you tell people again where they can find us?
InAnyCasePodcast.com, InAnyCasePod.wordpress.com.
I think they can also follow us on Twitter at InAnyCase_pod. And basically, yeah, that's what we got for this week.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks so much. All right, guys, have a good week.